Coming to you from top secret field offices worldwide, these brave men and women fight a battle for truth, justice, and good clean data. These agents of change make up the Bureau of Records, Objects, and Standards. They are the Data Bros.
Welcome to the Data Bros, your weekly 30-minute appointment with us, the Data Bros, who talk about the comic industry, comic book data, and everything that goes into running a modern comic store. This week, I'm your host, Brian, and with me are Jeff Figley.
Kia!
And Django Boren.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah.
All right, fellas, how you been? We haven't talked in a little while.
Yeah, cool. It's been, you know, 7 days, right? Right?
Well, no, it's like at least 14, according to the calendar.
Right, because we had the filler episode.
Yeah, we had a filler episode.
I've just been juicing.
You guys were so busy the last little while.
I tell you what, I've spent 7 days trying to track down Braeburn apples in town because they're Django's favorite apple, but I cannot find them anywhere for juicing purposes.
The only ones I could find were at Hagen, and they were mealy.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I've ever had a Braeburn.
B-R-A-E. While you're looking at it, that's your spelling. So, you know, find them. Maybe Canada's got a wealth right now.
Now, do you guys get like the Cortlands or any of those things?
Never heard of a Cortland.
Interesting. See, because a Cortland is a derivative of the Honeycrisp.
Okay.
And it seems to be a little bit cheaper than the Honeycrisp. And they're apparently more, what's that word where you get more of them?
Voluminous.
Nah, I don't feel like I wish we had Bob here right now because he'd tell. Listen, quick shout out to our title sponsor, Murphy's Apple Juice. Murphy's Apple Juice. It's the shape, not the taste, but it's also the taste, which is pretty darn good.
You could say that about anything. Oh, we can cut that out, shape? Right? I don't want to make Bob mad.
You can say that the shape is.
It's the shape. Bob's
Jeff,
right.
We've got one group who's decided to give us money in exchange for support, and you're trying to pick a fight with them right now?
This is a classic Django move.
But yeah. Bob doesn't want to give us money, so maybe we should say the heck with that guy.
Bob knows what's best for Bob's business. Yeah.
Carrie, listen, Carrie's where it's at. Hey, fellas, let us talk this week a little bit about email marketing, what it is, how to do it, and most importantly, how not to do it, because as my partner Craig says, marketing ruins everything.
That's a good tagline.
We're doing, especially since the parent company of Managed Comics is North IQ, a internet marketing company.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Are they paying for this episode?
Yeah, they should, right? They should. At Managed Comics, we've been doing, so this year we're going to do 12 different monthly, over the next 12 months, we're going to do one monthly article, and we're going to kind of break it down into like 4 weeks of little segments about it. So this is me kind of cheating and drafting off something I've already done so that I don't actually have to think about a topic this week, since it's my week to think about a topic. But because of that, it's really top of mind. I think we should talk a little bit about why an email list is a valuable asset. When I ran a comic shop, I considered it as valuable as any other asset we owned. What some best practices for email list management and growth are, how to deal with compliance and marketing permissions and all that nonsense that we have to deal with now. And maybe even some of the tools for email marketing. And of course, like most importantly, how you guys use email. I'll talk a little bit about how we use email and Managed Comics, and we can go into a little bit of kind of how our tools are actually using email. Talk a little bit too about the difference between a transactional email, which is an email that is triggered by a transaction, versus a marketing email, which has very, very different rules that are around it.
Yeah.
Let's set some ground rules though. This is the format that we use here at Data Bros, and we're not going to deviate from this format in any way, shape, or form.
Ever.
There, never again. We're not going to go backwards. We're not going to go sideways. This is the way it is. We go data broification first, which is the underlying data that supports our subject. Next, we go industry yammer, which is how the industry supports or presents challenges with our subject matter. Word. And finally, we'll talk about shop talk, which is really the practical ins and outs of the subject and how we deal with that topic in a retail environment.
So just so I'm clear, we've got these and we got the tight 30. Any other rules?
I think that's it. Like, go back to your corners and come out swinging, I think is the last. Okay. Oh, that might be fighting. Yeah, no, I don't think we have any other rules. Okay. Jeff, can you think of any rules that we need
to
abide by?
No, I mean, the old decency code, assume positive intent.
All right, let's get into some data brofication. What are some reasons you should be using email marketing? First of all, let's just, for the record, do you at the Comics Place in Bellingham, Washington, currently use email marketing for anything?
We do. We send out a weekly email that mostly Jeff writes. Mm-hmm. It focuses on the comics that came out that week and usually has some tie into whatever documentary Jeff has been watching.
Sounds right.
Yeah. You know, I don't love email marketing, and I'm somebody who gets a ton of emails. And because of that, I kind of hate email. So for me, in executing like an email thing for our store, it's very important for it to feel asinine or random or a direct interaction with my personality rather than like being sold things. So I even get a little bit self-conscious about when I'm showing, you know, what are the releases that are coming out that week and stuff. Yeah, but I'm a weird minority, I think, when it comes to this.
I think
stuff.
I'd like to dive deep into your specific emails, because I actually get your emails and read them, and I find them to be a hoot. And if Philip would have been reading them, he'd be sitting with a nice shiny bottle of scotch right now, but he mucked up that one.
He did.
But we can go into that a little bit in detail, because I think the fact that you guys speak specifically to specific people sometimes is part of the charm of your emails, and that's what I love, because it gives it like that insider feeling, like you're looking at something you shouldn't be looking at.
Yeah. But and that's exactly what I try to go for. I'll even tell Django often after you know a day, I'll be like, I was nervous about this part of the email I sent out, and he's like, yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, so a few of the reasons why you should be using email marketing. First of all, it is, so I don't know how to put this in a good way, but it is a asset that you're building for your company. So when you're building a mailing list, there's actually if we get really, really crass here, there's actually a formula that you can put on the value of an active email mailing list. Now, I don't know what the exact number is, but people will actually pay more for a business that has active email engagement.
Right.
So that's just something, like, if you're building, you know, nice fixtures and good logos and all that stuff, I think an email mailing list is as important. And one of the reasons for that is because, sure, you've got all your social media channels, but with any social media channel, you're at the mercy of the algorithm, right? And that algorithm
might even change the name of it, and everybody might run away from Twitter.
We call it X now. It's called X.
Oh, sorry.
But that's a great example where, like, you know, the entire, through no fault of anybody who's been building their brand on the former Twitter, that place is a ghost town now.
Right.
And the people that are there are not necessarily engaged in, you know, commerce conversation. They're engaged in this weird political war that's going on over in that land. Man, that's a dark place to be in.
I spend a lot of time there.
It's weird. It's gotten real weird.
Yeah, it excels for certain subgroups of media and is really a cesspool for other ones. Yeah.
And with Facebook particularly, you can just get like hidden for months at a time and not know why. And then suddenly the algorithm decides that you're relevant and brings you up. Now, with an email marketing list, you have control of when you send those emails. You have control of, you know, the subject line, which is going to be more readable or less readable depending on what you're doing. Even like something as small as the preview, you're in control of that stuff, and it doesn't really change from email to email. So that's a number one thing. And from a cost effectiveness standpoint, I think email marketing is one of the highest ROIs. I can't remember what the numbers are, but there's like there's actually metrics out there. They're easily Google. What's the ROI of email marketing? It's definitely the highest of any of your email marketing channels that you can do, or any of your marketing channels you can do. And again, once you've built that direct audience, you can market to that however you need to. And then, of course, it also helps to boost your customer retention and your customer loyalty, and even like your brand recognition and stuff like that, just by having good, solid emails.
So, so there's got to be a lot that goes into it. I think that we've kind of fallen into a mode that works well for us, and we get a lot of good feedback about it. The feedback we get is, hey, I read your email. It's not necessarily, hey, I read your email and I spent $100 because of it.
Correct.
And we don't kind of purposely, we don't really track that stuff, because we're going for more of a genuine feeling communication with customers and potential, you know, just fans of the store. Yeah. I'll bet that somebody could look at what we're sending out every week and come up with the perfect silver bullet to maximize profits and, you know, kind of the Murphy's apple juice sort of thing, where you're making apple-free apple juice all of a sudden.
Yeah. And the thing about that is, like, what I've seen in the past is when you start going down that route and you start, you know, we're going to send out 14 emails a week because the marketing person said that 14 emails is the optimum number of emails to send it, not 13, not 12, right, not 15. What we see all the time is just like, I don't know, it never works. I always say that, like, a marketing technique will work once, and then they close the door on that technique, and nobody else is going to be able to use that technique to get in again. And like, it's funny you mentioned that, you know, that people say anecdotally, I read your email and it got me into the store this week. I find the same thing with like everything that I do. So just recently I had a bunch of people who signed up who said, hey, I saw you at Comics Pro. And I don't remember seeing a lot of them at Comics Pro, but I'm going to trust them that we saw each other. And so that's something where, like, I don't have a one-to-one actual like metric that I could say, okay, these people are leads from Comics Pro.
Right.
But I know anecdotally that Comics Pro is providing me a lot of value. Yeah. And the same thing goes with, you know, the emails. My favorite thing was when the conversations went from who are you to I've heard you.
Right.
I've heard of you. I know who you are, kind of thing. So I think email is a great opportunity to do the same thing. And we're going to talk more about this later, but you guys in particular, I think, are really showing your personality with your emails. And that's super, super important.
And in my mind, that's the purpose of the email. I think that, you know, the thing that I think about is that people are given an infinite number of choices as to how they can acquire comic books.
Yep.
And they can do it cheaper other ways. But for me, what makes me most excited to shop at a store is that human connection with the person. So the emails that we send out weekly is mostly, you know, it's a shout about what's coming out this week, but it's also an attempt to remind people who is in the store and why they like coming in and the personalities that are associated with it. I've tried to get our employees to do them occasionally as well, but getting some pushback on that. But yeah, but maybe that's the preferred method, is Django or I. Our emails began by Django starting a random email and then giving it to me and seeing what I would do with it. Right. That was still my favorite
Those are so good.
thing, just because we were in there during the pandemic, and the email started at a time where the interaction between our customers and us was almost non-existent because it was the pandemic. So that's why we started doing it. So that's kind of the flag I try to carry on in those emails. But, you know, also striking that balance of like trying to turn people on to the comics that are coming out. But again, mostly offering a reminder of like, oh, yeah, I like those people. I want to go down there.
Well, you know what? Speaking of liking people, This week, as every week, we have our sponsor, Murphy's Apple Juice.
Oh, I love Murphy's.
And this week, we got an email from Carrie, the chairperson of the board of directors of Murphy's Apple Juice LLC. Perfect. And she writes, "Hey, bros, we're working on loads of exciting things here at Murphy's and sorting out some internal issues. This week, we'd love to take it back to basics and ask you, what are some of your favorite Murphy's Apple Juice memories? What's a moment in your life that Murphy's was there for? And what do you remember about Murphy's in your childhood?"
So Canada, what time do you think you got that email?
I don't know. I'd have to look at it. It came earlier today. I think it was like 3:15 p.m. Okay. today, Eastern
See, that's perfect.
Time.
That,
oh,
that's
and that'd
perfect.
Be noon. That'd be noon, Modesto.
I've been getting emails from her at like 10 or 11 o'clock Pacific time. And
really?
They are hard to describe any other way than liquor infused.
Yeah, there's some stuff going on. There's some stuff going on there.
So I'm just pumped about the clarity and actual kind of cohesiveness of this question. Very good.
Do you guys have any Murphy's memories from your childhood?
I mean, ever since I was a kid, I've been putting Murphy's on my cereal. I'm not really a sweet cereal guy, but Cheerios and Murphy's is pretty awesome.
I think they call those Apple Jacks, don't they?
They do.
I mean, you could.
You could.
Tell me another way that you want to eat the shredded wheat. Like you want savory shredded wheat? No, thanks. I'll have apple juice.
I'm obviously taken back to, I mean, the first sort of childhood summer memories I had, you know, at the playground. You know, your mom would drop you off at the playground with a little jar of jam and a juice box of Murphy's. And I remember, you know, being on the swings, you know, telling the girl sitting next to me, because we were going equal, you know, speed, like, we're married or whatever. And then, you know, being afraid of, like, don't swing over the bar, you'll get turned inside out. I loved the Murphy's apple juice in those early days as the sun was rising, you know, on my setting existence. But particularly when you would fall down after a scrape on the swings or wherever, I mean, Murphy's delicious apple juice, also incredible antiseptic. So you don't even need rubbing alcohol. So you fall down, you put a little of that Murphy's J on a cotton swab, put it on your freshly acquired wound, you're good to go.
Do you remember the 6 months when they had the promotion where it came with a Band-Aid on the back of the juice
absolutely.
Box? Like they only sold it to schools,
those.
But yeah.
So do you want to, I have a Murphy's juice injury story to give you. I don't know. Actually, geez, I don't know whether I should even tell this because it could. You know,
our tight 30 is going to be 20 minutes of Apple talk.
I'm just worried because they could get upset because, you know, I'm telling, but I mean this in a positive light. Now, Murphy's hasn't been available in Canada since 2003.
Right.
Right. But before that, and I think it's actually got to do with the bottles.
Well, the bottles and the tax difference.
The shape and the tax.
Yeah. Well, a couple of the bottles were considered pretty controversial here in Canada. So,
adults only.
So I don't know if you guys remember the donut shaped Murphy's bottle.
Yeah. Oh,
so yeah. I had one of those at the playground and I was sipping on some juice as you do, swinging, and I actually broke this tooth. Like, I don't know if you can see it, but I got
bigger than the others.
Yeah. The chunk there that's missing is actually from the bottle.
The apple smack.
As I was swinging.
Oh, the one next to it.
Yeah, not that big one. The one that's kind of half
mono tooth.
Yeah. So, you know, and it wasn't long after that that they stopped selling the circle container in Canada. I think my mom had something to do with that, possibly. Nice. But
highly likely.
But then in 2003, they just, Allen's came in. And I've always wondered, Jeff, If Allen's apple juice is in any way associated with Allen Murphy, because Allen's is the name in Canada. We haven't had Murphy's since 2003.
So when you get on to like murphysgenealogy.com, Allen is just a grayed out box in the family tree.
It's interesting.
Like they don't talk about his children, the work that he's done. He's almost been excommunicated from the family. I have to imagine it's a competitive apple business. Absolutely.
All right. Well, you know, we don't want to make this the official Murphy's Apple Juice podcast. So Applecast. I'm just going to, I'll end this with Murphy's Apple Juice. It's the shape, not the taste, but it's also the taste, which is pretty dang good. It's fantastic. We're going to jump right into some industry yammer. I was just wondering, could we talk about some folks who do this well in, like, because I don't know about you guys, but I get a ton of publisher emails every week.
Yep.
And there's a couple of them that stand out. Is there any of them for you guys that really stand out that are like, when you get one of those ones, you crack that open because you're actually interested in seeing what's in it?
You trying to get us in trouble?
Well, I'm just curious if there's anything, you know, there that you love. Or is there anything? I mean, it doesn't even have to be comics, right? There might just be, like, I'll tell you right now, when David Harbour sketched email comes in, that's like, I literally crack that open the Fair moment enough. I get it. Because they're spectacular.
I read that. I don't read much from the publishers, but I see them as I archive them. There's just so many. Like, as there a really retailer, are. There's hundreds in a day. And yep. There's no way to really tell which ones have important information. There's just not enough hours in the day to really engage with them all.
So yeah. Keeping that in mind, how do you learn about like a new publisher initiative? What usually is the thing that rattles you?
I mean, seems like their communications through Facebook conversations and like the retailer groups and the responses happening there seemed to like kind of throw a flag up for Django, for things that he will pass on to me. You know, I do frequent a lot of comic book websites, so those news things will come up on those, you know, like everyone loves and hates, but mostly hates Bleeding Cool. But that one has, you know, early information on those sorts of initiatives. Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that I most like about email is that I get a confirmation email for the tickets for concerts I buy, and I can prove that I have a ticket with email. But I hate email. Like, Django knows I hate it.
You do. I've heard that story.
Yeah.
You got a tough crowd here, Brian.
When do they work? I frequently check emails that I get from the record company Mobile Fidelity, because they produce really high quality records and they usually sell out because of the print runs being really small. They'll sell out in like a number of minutes. So when I see one of those, I will check it to see if it's the specific Bob Dylan album I've been waiting for to come back into print for like a year and a half. That is an instance of like an email list that I use.
It's funny because I'm just thinking about there's one specific email. I don't want to spoil who it is or who sends it, but there's one specific email that I get every month that has a subject matter that's formatted the exact same way every month. And that is like the email that basically tells me that the monthly catalogs are ready to go. So as soon as I get that email, it's like Pavlovian. It usually comes on a Thursday night. That's and then awesome. I just go into action and start cleaning up all the monthly data.
Yeah.
And last month I may or may not spend like almost 2 weeks fixing things that are still broken.
It's a rough month.
I mean, the conversation month. That comes to mind for me around email is a conversation that Django and I've had a lot, which is, you know, email is very useful in the hands of people who can and do curate the way that their inbox functions.
Sure.
So like different tabs for promotions and filtering emails as they come in. And it doesn't really matter how diligent I seem to be. I'm still like getting tons of things in my main inbox. But you know, I think that like the people who email works well for are the people who curate that stuff well. And there are a tremendous number of those people.
And yeah, there are people who just like email, you know,
you
go to Bleeding Cool. I never go to Bleeding Cool.
Yeah.
I go to Facebook. You rarely go to Facebook. So I think as a marketer, you have to meet people where they are.
Yep.
And some people are super on email.
Exactly. Yep.
It's funny you mentioned that, Jeff. All my emails that are for the publishers go into my updates folder in Gmail. And that's just where I know to go and look for all of them.
When you want to read 300 emails.
to yep. our listeners, currently I would have. Love to hear back from our listeners, people who do send out emails for marketing yep. and stuff. How does that work well? Like, what is the return on investment for you guys? What is working well, or when do you see that stuff working? And then for our listeners on the other side of it, you know, I'm openly talking about being a bad person to have opinions about this specific thing, but I am curious to hear from the people who do get emails and what does work. And when I do hear people read our email, I'm like, oh my God, okay, right. I forget that people do that.
Yeah. I'd love to know like what kind of objectives, campaign objectives and like marketing metrics that they have. Cause as much as we've said previously that, you know, those things don't matter, I still crack open my opens and click through rates and make sure that they're maintaining, you know, in the 20 to 40% range, especially mm-hmm. for opens. Like I want people to be actually looking at my emails. They may not click yeah. through them. But if I do see something is like performing super well, that will be something I'll try again. Like
definitely,
you know, and we've had some really good success recently with a couple of the promotions we did. Just having people click through and book meetings and stuff. That's yeah. like, for me, our ultimate success metric is whether or not somebody books a meeting with me. Right. And a couple of the emails that Craig did last month had like, I think I had 42 meetings last month.
Holy cow. In
March. Yeah. It was unbelievable. It was a great month.
Wow.
And it's largely because of the stuff Craig did last month. So I'd love to know what marketing metrics some of our listeners have. Like, what are you using as your success metrics? How do you know that this is, or are you just continually pumping stuff into the void and hoping that you're just getting anecdotal stories?
I mean, I feel like I'm pretty good at marketing things, but I am terrible at the precise way to do it, right?
Yeah.
Like I can get people to come out for a party and right. I can make sure that people know that we have a cool store and I can do the graphic design for a poster, or, you know, like come up with schemes to get people to interact with us. But I never think about measuring the success. And I never think about like, what are the objectives beyond get them in the store? And I don't know if I would have fun doing that at all.
Right.
Or if I would just be like, no, I'll just like, we should hire somebody to do this because I hate this job now that it's all about the numbers.
Well, but also, okay, Django. Okay.
I'm saying I'm doing it wrong, right?
What you're saying is true, but this is where I fundamentally disagree with you, because I think you guys take a look at your thing and you write an email that you would want to get. Which yes. is engagement, right? That's engagement 101 yeah. is I'm going to write. And this is where marketing people get it wrong, is that they start building something for a mythical audience. Like
right.
in mm-hmm. this case, we're comic nerds and you guys own a comic store and you are very much your audience. Mm-hmm. You know, with me as a marketing guy for Managed Comics, maybe I'm not my audience because I'm looking for people that are trying to solve a problem. But with you, like, I think it's, you just want to build a cool email that gets people into your store. I think that's
right.
exactly what people have got to think about.
Yeah. And you know, for our emails, like if I write an email, it is equal parts writing an email that I would want to receive, but then also understanding my limitations. Like I feel real disingenuous when I am seemingly just marketing or something. Like I don't feel myself when I'm doing it. So, you know, there's an aspect of just being true to myself in those emails that I write, which as many things that I do, you know, it's a haphazard sort of comment on the way other people do it and taking a shitty way out, but kind of making that the thing is how I do things that I don't feel I'm good at.
That's the best way to do anything.
Yeah. I agree.
Let's jump right into our shop talk, because I think we've already been soaking in it. We just didn't realize it.
Oh, you made Django laugh because you said soaking.
Soaking in the shop talk. It's like a sitz bath.
I'm curious from like a technical perspective, what do you guys use to send your emails? Are you using, I think you use MailChimp, right?
Aha.
I'm not sure if you've ever heard of Shopify.
Do you know about Shopify, oh, Brian?
So you're sending them out through Shopify Mail.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I do it all through Shopify, which works pretty well, except for like once a month they change the layout or how things work. So I have to refigure out how to do it all. Or like realize I have to do it on a new browser from now on. But yeah, I do it all through Shopify because our website, like we push all of our items to Shopify. So it's easy to populate the email with the products that are set to the collections that are, you know, relative to that time period.
It's funny because when you guys started using, because I think you started using Shopify during the pandemic, right? Like 2020-ish? Yeah,
day one.
Yeah. So when you started using Shopify, they were having this massive battle with MailChimp because they wanted every app that used their, that was in their app store to be 100% paid for through Shopify. And MailChimp was like, no. On account of we have a business,
right,
which is probably at least, you know, maybe a half as big as yours,
right?
So they just weren't in the app store, and then there was a big like deal made of it about a year ago that MailChimp's back in Shopify, so you can use your MailChimp account in Shopify, and then you get all those MailChimp tools, which are pretty nice, but I mean it gets pricey real quick. Yeah. I think Shopify's mail is a lot more affordable than MailChimp's.
We pay like eventually during a month, we'll hit some limits and we'll pay $4 for 40,000 new emails or something like that. Like it's,
I think they're really, really satisfied with that. For sure.
We also, so through Comic Shop Assistant, we're testing sending emails using MailChimp's transactional messages. And
what's that one called? It's
Mandrill.
Mandrill. That's right.
Yeah. And I think at some point we're gonna have to switch over to actual mailing lists when we want to send out, like, I don't know. I don't quite understand the difference between transactional and non-transactional. Most of the things that we do seem to be individualized to the specific person we're sending to, so sending out invoices and statements and just an email that says, hey, we subscribed you to these, we think you might be interested in those. I think it gets a little bit slushy to define exactly what type of emails we're sending on some of those, but I'll probably learn that at some point before we start using
it. I can give you a little bit of a, because this is kind of where, you know, this is where I come in handy. Actually, transactional emails are exactly like you said. They're something that are tied to a transaction. So that transaction can be as simple as like, this is something you'll be interested in because you're interested in these other things. Mm-hmm. That is where it gets a little into the marketing standpoint. Mm-hmm. But if it's something where the user has initiated something, so for example, a confirmation email that says that they are subscribed to a thing, or a confirmation email that says that the thing they're subscribed to came in. Those are transactional. Confirmation that your order has been paid or that your order has been picked up, all transactional. Where it gets a little more, like you were saying, it gets a little gray when you start to say, you are currently subscribed to this. We've subscribed you to this. You may be interested in this.
Mm-hmm.
First two, completely transactional. The third one where we say, you might be interested in this, that gets a little gray. But if you're including those in the same email, that's a transactional email. That's fine because you're updating the transaction status of their account.
Right.
Now marketing, and so we do both in Managed Comics. We offer transactional emails where they can say, these are have been pulled for you. We rely on Shopify to do 90% of the transactional emails, but we do provide pulls. We're going to provide like updates in terms of you were subscribed to Amazing Spider-Man 2023. You're now subscribed to Amazing Spider-Man 2024, which I just assume happened this year. and that will be a transactional email. But then we also allow for some really, really bare bones marketing emails where you can say, we're having a 40% off sale this week. But within Managed Comics, there's a setting where people can say, don't send me marketing emails. And if they opt out of the marketing emails from a Managed Comics email it will not opt them out of transactional emails because they have to know about their transactional stuff.
Yeah.
I'm interested in sort of the next iteration of emails, which is I think where we're at and have been for a minute, which is sort of messaging systems within apps or within systems that you're using, right? I'm way more likely to read something that's been sent to me if it's a notification on a Facebook app or a notification on a different app, or you know, use Comic Shop Assistant, you know, when there's the customer facing side of that, like a messaging system or communication system within that, I think greatly increases the likelihood that people will be checking that, because it's like an account that's tied to a thing. It feels like much more of a two-way relationship, whereas emails to me feel very much like a one-way relationship. I can't turn on or off these things. They're going to be appearing regardless. So I either ignore the entire field because I have such a low hit rate of things worthwhile coming through it. Whereas, you know, eBay or something, like I check those, or my Discogs account or PayPal, you know, like those are things where communications come in that way. It feels more pertinent. It feels like there's an action that it, you know, is related to or a response that it's eliciting. Mm-hmm. And I think that me growing up using applications like that is one of the reasons that I have a slightly different relationship with email than like Django. And I think it's a thing that will continue separating as time goes on and the way people use these systems. Because I do think a general repository for communications, you know, is not super useful moving forward for a lot of things, because we've partitioned so much of our existences off into pockets, your Instagram and your Facebook and your Twitter and all those things. So even getting a communication from those answers the question of what it's pertaining to when you see that notification, rather than needing to go into your email to check it and then see who it was sent from or like which box it's in.
That's interesting.
Is the stuff that my brain is sort of thinking about where email communications from a business perspective are going and ways to utilize that.
Yeah. I think we're going to wrap this up because we could go into so much more stuff. We could talk about marketing automation. We could talk about personalization, analytics, growing your list, segmentation, which we didn't get into. There's so much. Not to make this a total shill for Managed Comics, but I'm going to include a link to our current blog post in the show notes here. And over the next 3 weeks, as we just posted this one last week, over the next 3 weeks, we're going to do a series of different kind of updates to it. And one of those is going to be, I'm actually going to do a video walkthrough of Shopify's email system and really walk through how I would set it up if I was setting it up for the first time. And I'll talk a little bit about segmentation and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So if people want to check that out, that will be in the show notes here. And hopefully that will give people an idea.
Sweet.
But you should send us an email about this, everybody.
Absolutely. Yeah. Send us an email. This is, we're a little long.
No, Jeff at the Comics Place, I will get it. And then that is an email account I check often because I ask for communications through podcasts for it. So that's an instance, you know, of like very useful.
Nice. Well, if people want to send us an email, they're going to send it to podcast@databrosinc.com. That's databrosinc.com. Don't forget to rate and subscribe to Data Bros Inc. on your favorite podcast app, or watch us online at youtube.com/@databrosinc. And you'll find Data Bros and all of our projects at databrosinc.com. You can also learn about the Comet Standard at cometstandard.com. Why don't you guys go first? Django, who are you?
I'm Django, and you can find me on the internet. There's not a lot of us. I'm the only Django Boren. And you can also find Comic Shop Assistant, our point of sale software, at comicshopassistant.com and other places on the internet.
Jeff?
You can find me on Facebook at Jeffrey Figley. You can also get me on Venmo at Jeff-Figley if you're feeling generous.
Guys run a comic shop, right?
Yeah, we do. The Comics Place, Bellingham, Washington. It's the most fun place to buy your comics on the globe.
Awesome. I'm Brian Garside, and you can find me on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at Managed Comics, where you'll discover everything you need to know about Managed Comics, or you can visit managedcomics.com. And that is going to do it for this week. We will see you next time.
Keep watching the panels.
The Data Bros is a joint project from the teams behind Comic Shop Assistant and Manage Comics. Data Bros are Django Boren, Jeff Figley, and Brian Garside. Brian Garside produces and edits the episode. And you'll find more about the Data Bros online at databrosinc.com. Subscribe, like, and review the Data Bros on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I like that. That was good. Yeah.
Jeff, did you know that I went through all of these scripts and changed favorite with the U to favorite? Spelled like
no, grown-ups? Like a normal person.
I yeah, thought you were doing that. That oh my god, I kept on seeing something change, and I was like, "Who's changing my script as I'm working on it?" That's so funny.